Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the University of Minnesota Morris, ranked by the Carnegie Foundation as one of seven leading national public liberal arts colleges.
It's 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankton. Glad you could join us. Five down, seven to go, maybe. Nurses at five Twin Cities area hospitals have now reached last-minute tentative contract agreements, which, if approved by the rank and file, would avoid threatened nurses' strikes at those hospitals. However, 5,400 nurses at seven other hospitals are still scheduled to go on strike at 5:30 tomorrow morning. It would be one of the largest nurses' strikes in U.S. history. This hour of midday, we're going to take a closer look at the latest news developments on the nurses' strike. And over the noon hour, we're going to take a closer look at some of the broader problems facing this nation's health care system. A reminder, you can keep track of the latest nurses' strike developments on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. And also, if you'd like to express your opinions on the strike or the health care system in general, make sure you get up on our online soapbox and have your say. Again, minnesotapublicradio.org is our website address. Now, with all these last-minute tentative agreements, if you're keeping score at home, here is the latest roster of which hospitals would still be affected by a strike. Abbott Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis, Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, the Phillips Eye Institute in Minneapolis, United Hospital in St. Paul, Fairview University Medical Center in Minneapolis, Fairview Southdale Hospital in Edina, and Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park. As we said, nurses at five hospitals have now reached tentative agreements. Nurses are voting today on tentative agreements with St. John's Hospital in Maplewood, St. Joseph's Hospital in St. Paul, and Bethesda Rehabilitation Hospital in St. Paul. Overnight, after 20 hours of negotiations, nurses at the two children's hospitals also reached a tentative contract agreement, and a vote is scheduled on that agreement tomorrow. Those hospitals are Children's Hospital in Minneapolis and Children's Hospital in St. Paul. So once again, tentative agreements have been reached at five hospitals. Strikes are still threatened at seven hospitals. However, one additional note here on this ever-changing story. A federal mediator has directed negotiators for Fairview Hospitals and the Nurses Union to resume talks this afternoon. Well, joining us now to talk about the situation is Jennifer Michelson, who's a member of the Minnesota Nurses Association and a nurse at United Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
First off, best guess, do you think these tentative agreements at the five hospitals will be accepted by the rank and file?
At this point in time, I don't have a basis to, I have not worked with their nurse group to know where they're going to come in with a vote.
Mm-hmm. In general, do you know, is there a history to these things? If an agreement is reached, do the nurses tend to accept them, or is it all over the park?
I believe it's all over the park. Actually, I'd like to talk about what's happening at Allina System, because we still do not have a settlement proposed.
Right. Well, we'll get to all of those. I'm wondering, are there any talks scheduled to head off the strike at the other hospitals?
The federal mediator has called us together with the Allina System for 1 o'clock today.
Oh, okay. So that would include all of the hospitals. Then are talks planned at this point, or is Methodist off by itself?
I'm understanding that all three of us three hospital systems would be talking today.
Okay. Is there any talk at this point among the nurses of delaying the threatened strike tomorrow morning, given the progress that's been made, the tentative agreements at the five hospitals, the resumed negotiations this afternoon? Any talk that you might delay?
No. We have federal regulations that we have to give a 10-day strike notice. And if we don't go through with a strike on the date that is proposed, we have to put another 10 days in. Our nurses then would be working without a contract. Most would end up laid off because the hospitals have downsized in preparation. And not having a contract, you're not protected from the various activities that the administration may want to do.
So no possibility of a delay?
No.
Might these tentative agreements serve as a framework for an agreement for the other seven hospitals?
Well, I find that hard to see that it would work for Allina. Allina has had a slightly higher salary than the other hospitals, and there's been no proposal to maintain our higher salary. And in fact, we're at this point in time receiving a lower wage increase than the other hospitals. And at this point in time, we've not had any movement on the insurance, which was significantly an issue. If nurses can't get health care where they give health care, we see a problem with that. And our practice, which was our number one issue, workload and practice, has not been addressed.
If you understand all of these issues are big issues, is there one that really is the biggest issue for nurses?
Yes, it would be the practice issue, workload issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how safe the care is that we give inside the institution.
To an outsider, it's hard to understand why it is that agreements that are reached at these other hospitals might not apply at the hospitals where there have been agreements. It would seem like workplace issues, staffing and the rest, that would cut across hospital lines.
You have to look at how children's hospitals are reimbursed, and also the parents involved that may be able to assist with some of the things when you're short nursing assistants. They may be able to help with the walking, the bathing, the toileting activities. In hospital secure for adult patients, there's a lot less family involvement in that sense, that they're not there to do that kind of activity. When we're short caregivers, we aren't replacing them at this point in time, and we still have the same issues of needing to keep the patients safe and clean and following on our standards of nursing care that we're not able to perform. Also, at Allina, we have been progressive in the past with setting some ratio and nurse-patient ratio agreements in place. What we found, we're not arguing about the ratios that should be there. We're arguing about when they can't find the nurse to fill the ill call, or because of knowing out a week or two in advance, we're down three on the schedule, and they have not been able to find replacements. They continue to admit the same load of patients, and so the ratio language that the other hospitals have gone for in this round of negotiations, we've had experience with, doesn't solve when they just can't find the nursing personnel to come in.
Mm-hmm. Are wages a big issue?
Not as significant. We still feel it's important that the profession progress, and in order to have the profession progress, we need to have wages comparable to other professions. But nurses like doing their job. They like patient care. The ones of us in here would prefer to continue doing it. We're just scared that in the future, as we're short now, that we'll be short 650,000 positions at 2020, and our acuity and technology is just going to skyrocket.
Mm-hmm. If there is a strike, the hospitals plan to bring in replacement nurses. In your mind, can those replacements provide adequate care for patients at the hospitals?
Well, I'm concerned because at this point in time, the regular nurses that are staffing the hospitals are scared about the care that we give now, day to day. I would be very concerned about the replacement nurses in knowing the computer systems for documentation, for being able to look at what's happened with the patient in the past day and know going forward how to proceed. They wouldn't know where the supplies are. They wouldn't have the team knowing you can anticipate this person will do that and that person will do another activity. You just don't know what to expect of your team. And I would be concerned that that won't work as efficiently. And as nurses are there 24 hours, they're the ones that first monitor and catch the signs and symptoms of complications occurring.
If there is a strike as of tomorrow morning, how long can you stay on strike?
We're prepared to go for the duration. It may be a couple months strike.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Michelson, who is a member of the Minnesota Nurses Association. She is a nurse at United Hospital, one of the hospitals that where a tentative agreement has not been reached yet. Joining us now is Shireen Gandhi Kozol, who is Assistant Vice President of the Minnesota Hospital and Healthcare Partnership. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
There are these tentative agreements at five of the hospitals. Does that increase your hope that agreements can be reached at the remaining seven, or are they mostly lost causes at this point?
Well, I think at this point we need to just be respectful that the hospitals and nurses that have reached these agreements need to, we need to allow the Minnesota Nurses Association to communicate with their members and determine what the best thing is to do. The rest of the hospitals, we also need to be, give them some space to meet together with nurses as that happens and work hard to reach a resolution. So, at this point, I don't know what it means for the other hospitals. We're just standing back and hoping that each group can talk through the issues and reach a resolution.
Is there much carryover one hospital to the other, or are the conditions at each of these hospitals sufficiently different that you really can't say, well, gosh, we've got a model agreement here at this hospital, so let's just use that at Hospital B?
Again, I would put it back to the individual hospitals and nurses. They can look at any information that's been released publicly on those that have reached a tentative agreement and see if that works for them.
From your perspective, what are the major issues separating the hospitals and the nurses?
I think that it varies from hospital to hospital. And, at this point, I wouldn't want to get into what the details are at each facility.
Given the importance of nurses to the healthcare system, how can hospitals afford not to pay them give them a substantial increase in wages to the extent that that's an issue?
Nurses absolutely are a critical component of healthcare that's delivered in hospitals and many healthcare settings. And it's my opinion that we are seeing the hospitals offer up very significant increases, certainly higher than other settlements that we've seen across the country, even post-strike. When we look at it on a large scale, there certainly have been, a couple hospitals that were that had very low salaries, and so their percentages were higher. But, with our nursing market being one of the better-paid markets in the country, and the offer that the offers that we're seeing on the table, I think it does demonstrate that the hospitals are putting money to the nurses and to the people that are delivering care.
Mm-hmm. The replacement nurses who would be brought in if there is a strike, can they, in your mind, provide adequate care to patients?
Well, the replacement nurses that are coming in, first and foremost, are nurses. They have, on average, 5 to 12 years of experience, so they are experienced nurses. Your previous caller, Jennifer, brings up a good point. Everything is different in the hospitals from hospital to hospital, and we're doing the best we can with a tough situation. We can't have patients in the Twin Cities not having care. There isn't enough room in the other hospitals to absorb these patients, so we have our back against a wall, and we're forced to continue to deliver care so that we're able to provide for our patients. What we're doing is everything we can to ensure a smooth transition. So they're going through orientation. They've been matched carefully from their skills that they have to where they'll be working in the hospital. We're surrounding them with other members of the care team, our certified nurse specialists, nurse practitioners, nurse managers that are not out on strike, additional physicians, respiratory therapists, on and on. these teams, chief medical officers, that will be there as resources for them, extra nurses on staff as resources for them to make the transition as smooth as possible and to help coordinate care.
How long can, if there is a strike, how long can the hospitals that are subject to a strike continue to provide quality care before that quality starts to slip?
Well, what you will see if we do in fact have some strikes is those hospitals focusing their resources on patients in a life-threatening situation. So we have to put the resources where the most critical needs are, and patients that are scheduled for elective surgeries would be the first ones to be inconvenienced, to maybe have their surgeries postponed or moved to another facility. Because really hospitals have to make sure that those people that need emergency care, critical care, are able to get it. And so we'll see the focus on that, and it's the other aspects of health care that we might see curtailed or moved or postponed.
But if somebody finds themselves in one of the hospitals subject to a strike, they can assume that they'll get good quality care?
Yes, they can assume that their physicians will be there working closely with the nurses, that there'll be other members of the team, and that the nurses that are there are highly qualified, experienced nurses.
Okay. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Shireen Gandhi-Kozel, who's Assistant Vice President of the Minnesota Hospital and Healthcare Partnership. If you're just joining us here on Midday, we are updating the nurses' strike story, the threatened nurses' strike story. 12 hospitals were on the list, but there have been tentative contract agreements reached now between the nurses and 5 of the hospitals. 7 still on the list. If there is a strike, it is scheduled to begin at 5:30 tomorrow morning. Now, again, we want to call your attention to our continuing coverage on our website, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org, and also encourage you, if you have some thoughts on this issue, to get up on our soapbox online and have your say. Again, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org is our website address. Over the noon hour today, we're going to be joined by Arthur Kaplan, a biomedical ethicist, talk about some of the larger issues in the healthcare system, issues that apparently aren't going to go away even if there isn't a nurse's strike. So we hope you'll be able to join us for that conversation over the noon hour. John Budd joins us right now. He's been tracking these negotiations in the nursing situation. He is a professor of industrial relations at the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. Morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Surprised that 5 of these hospitals were able to reach last-minute tentative agreements?
Pleasantly surprised, but yeah, surprised given how far the parties seemed to be apart earlier this week. The rhetoric is certainly very heavy and very adversarial. The previous callers have demonstrated how far apart they seem to be at some hospitals. But on the other hand, collective bargaining does have a way of really having things fall into place quite quickly when negotiations are really ripe for agreement. So to that extent, it's not quite as surprising.
Does these tentative agreements, in your mind, change the dynamic at the remaining 7?
I think the potential is definitely there. There's a phrase, success is contagious, and hopefully the public can hope that that's the case here. And as there are more and more precedent settlements, you can think of that as really the negotiations gaining momentum at these other hospitals. The previous callers have described some of the differences across the different hospitals and how each situation is unique, but hopefully the mediator can really get them to focus on the similarities and really use those settlements as a guide for their own settlements. Of course, with these differences, the settlements are not going to be identical, but certainly you can try to use that as a springboard to their own agreements.
Apparently, the federal mediators have called all the parties together for some more talks starting this afternoon. Could we expect those to continue through the afternoon, through the evening, and all night long?
Yeah, I would think, given the gravity of the situation that we're dealing with healthcare here, I would definitely expect the federal mediator to do whatever they can to keep them really as long as possible. We saw last night with the negotiations going, 20 hours or so, that when progress is being made, negotiators can stay with it and hammer out the issues. And again, I'd expect the mediators to do everything they can to really keep the parties talking and at the table.
What does a federal mediator do in a circumstance like this? Do they shuttle from room to room? Is that how it works? Or what is their role?
Yeah, really a variety of things. Their role overall is as a facilitator, and the mediator is really empowered to do whatever he or she thinks is best to really try to facilitate the parties reach an agreement. And part of that is shuttling back and forth, trying to go to each side individually, maybe reframing some of the issues, trying to get them to look at issues in different ways, maybe really trying to get them to think hard about some of their priorities, what things can be traded off, and then ideally bringing the parties back together, getting them to talk face-to-face, because ultimately in mediation, unlike some other forms of dispute resolution, the parties must reach agreement on their own.
Mm-hmm. If there is a strike, if these talks, these last-minute negotiations fail, and there is a strike tomorrow morning, could we expect the talks to resume right away, or traditionally is there some time then when all talks are suspended?
Well, unfortunately, we're dealing with an atypical situation here in healthcare, and as Jennifer mentioned, with the 10-day notification period, that really complicates negotiations here. In a negotiation outside of healthcare, you know, if there was significant progress being made, you know, this afternoon and tonight, it would not be unusual to expect there to be, you know, day-to-day extensions and not even experience a strike. But here, where you have the 10-day complication, you also have the complication that the replacement nurses are already here, they're going through orientation, they're going through training. To a certain extent, the hospitals are probably going to have to pay them one way or the other. I think that may increase the chance that if there is a strike that we might see, you know, the parties staying away from each other for a little while, and it may take longer than in some other situations to actually get them back to the table.
Now, traditionally, when replacement workers are brought in a strike situation, does that further aggravate the ill feelings between management, the employer and the employee?
Oh, definitely. And there's some classic examples right here in Minnesota. You can go down south to the Hormel strike 15 or so years ago. The National Guard was brought in and replacements were brought in. And, you know, it was just an incredibly adversarial situation up north with some of the international paper negotiations and replacements being used up there. So it's definitely the case that the most violent strikes, the most bitter strikes involve the use of replacement workers.
Staffing issues seem to be a real big bone of contention in the nurses' strike situation. Is that unique to the nursing profession, or are other professions as well thinking more and more about, oh, I don't know, for lack of a better term, respect in the workplace?
I think respect in the workplace is really a classic issue for employees and for labor unions as well, really for the post-war period. And unions have really made, you know, fighting for dignity and respect at work really a central theme, again, for decades. Now, I think the situation is maybe a little bit more extreme than in a lot of other situations in the nursing case in terms of, you know, the need to work 12-hour shifts or more, and, you know, the levels of employee shortages that the healthcare industry has been witnessing. So I don't think the theme is unique, but I think perhaps the severity among nurses is.
What about the idea of sharing some responsibility for staffing decisions and, in this case, patients, a number of patients who are admitted to hospitals and the rest? Is that unique?
It's not unique in that there's been a large movement towards employee involvement in a lot of industries. You know, you can look at auto plants, you can look at lots of different situations where, you know, management has finally woken up after, 40 years or so since the end of World War II, say, wait a minute, these employees are on the shop floor or, you know, in the hotel lobby or, you know, in the delivery room at the hospital, wherever. These employees are doing these jobs in a professional way day after day. They have to have great ideas about what's going on, about how to make things better, whether it's in terms of efficiency or quality of care. So it's not unique that way. Hopefully they'll really be able to take it to a meaningful step because, you know, as your discussion in the noon hour will definitely get at, there are some difficult issues in healthcare that aren't going away.
All right. Thanks, Professor. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
John Budd, who is a professor of industrial relations at the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. Indeed, over the noon hour today, we're going to be talking with ethicist Arthur Kaplan about some of the larger issues facing the healthcare system, whether there's a nurse's strike here in the Twin Cities or not. some of those larger issues are not going away, and you'll have an opportunity to join in that conversation over the noon hour. Meanwhile, we're going to continue our conversation about the nurses' situation right after news headlines. An invitation to join our conversation online, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. We'll continue in just a couple minutes.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Minnesota Historical Society, offering a travel guide highlighting 25 historic sites around the state at 888-PAST-FUN.
This week on A Prairie Home Companion, the Hopeful Gospel Quartet. Michael Doucet and Beau Soleil are with us from Louisiana, and a wonderful poet from San Antonio, Naomi Shihab Nye. The Adventures of Guy Noir, Radio Private Eye, and in Lake Wobegon, the story of Kate Inkvist, who's going off to college, and the story of the talking toilet seat.
Saturday afternoon at 5 and Sunday at noon on Minnesota Public Radio.
Just a reminder, you're listening to member-supported Minnesota Public Radio. We thank you for your loyal and generous support. News headlines now. Here's Stephen John. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. Timothy McVeigh's lawyers are at his Indiana prison to find out if he wants to try to delay his execution. A third lawyer is in Denver, ready to file a request with a federal judge if McVeigh says yes. Former FBI agent Robert Hansen has pleaded innocent to charges he had a second career as a Moscow spy. The former counterintelligence agent could get the death penalty if convicted. President Bush apparently is not pressuring Israel to stop retaliatory attacks on Palestinians. After a 20-minute White House meeting, Israeli President Moshe Katsav replied no when he was asked whether Bush had asked for Israeli restraint. Wall Street is mounting a rather tentative recovery from yesterday's steep sell-off. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 29 points. The Nasdaq has gained 27 so far today. Analysts say investors have been selling equities in recent sessions as companies warn about profit weakness in the second quarter and beyond. Pete Sampras is 0 for 12 at the French Open. Sampras has won a men's record 13 Grand Slam tennis tournaments, but was knocked out of the Paris tournament today in straight sets by Spaniard Gallo Blanco. A Minnesota student is still in the running at the National Spelling Bee in Washington. 13-year-old Sean Conley attends the Minnesota Renaissance School in Anoka. He survived the fourth round by spelling inesculent, a word meaning not suitable for use as food. It's the third straight year he's been in the final rounds. Last year, Conley was the Bee's runner-up. City leaders will meet with residents and business owners tonight in Granite Falls to try to develop plans for curbing future flood problems. The public meeting starts at 7 p.m. in the Kilowatt Community Center. The forecast for this afternoon calling for mostly cloudy skies. There is a chance of showers mainly in the west and south. A better chance of showers tonight in the north and west, and statewide tomorrow a chance for rain. 65 in International Falls this hour, 64 in Duluth and St. Cloud. It's 57 in Rochester and 60 in the Twin Cities, Gary. That's a news update from NPR.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. It's 26 minutes now before 12 o'clock. This is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. And this hour we are updating the nurses' strike story. As you probably know by now, nurses at 12 Twin City area hospitals are scheduled to go on strike tomorrow morning at 5:30. However, last-minute negotiations have produced tentative contract agreements at five of those hospitals. And so it looks like a strike may be averted at those five hospitals. But if there is a strike, the Allina system is going to be hit hardest by among the hospitals still on the strike list. Four of the seven hospitals that haven't reached a tentative contract agreement with the Minnesota Nurses Association are all members of the Allina system. Abbott Northwestern in Minneapolis, United in St. Paul, the Phillips Eye Institute in Minneapolis, and Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids. We should note that the federal mediators have called the Nurses Association and representatives of all seven hospitals back together for talks starting this afternoon to try to head off the strike. But in the meanwhile, if there is going to be one, Allina is certainly going to be right in the middle of it. And joining us now is Barbara Balick, an administrator with Allina, who's working on Allina's contingency plan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary.
Will your hospitals be open for business if there's a strike?
Definitely will. We've been working very hard to make sure that we're able to continue to serve the community in a slightly reduced capacity.
What won't be offered at the hospitals that people would normally expect?
The biggest thing that's been affected is our people who have scheduled surgery or other procedures. We've asked physicians and their patients to please put that off as we make sure we handle those with the most immediate needs. Those who need immediate surgery, are having a heart attack, those who are delivering babies or need immediate mental health services, so we can assure those people have full access.
Mm-hmm. So elective surgeries are being delayed?
Right. Those things that could be put off a week or two until we hopefully have a settlement.
Mm-hmm. Now, replacement nurses are being brought in case of a strike.
Yes, that's correct.
In your mind, will they be able to provide all the services that the regular nurses have been able to provide?
Within Alina, we've done similar to all of the other hospitals in the community, which is identify what are the skills we need and then have worked with the agencies to bring in nurses with those skills. And we are now in the process of verifying those skills, what we call a competency assessment, to make sure that we have people with the right skills. The other thing is, as with other hospitals, we have a number who also provide patient care or will be providing patient care beyond those RNs who will be on strike, and that includes LPNs, non-contract RNs, nursing assistants, nurse managers. So those will all be available also.
How long are you folks planning for? I mean, if there is a strike, what are you thinking? Is it going to be a long strike, just a short blip on the screen? What is your planning account for?
Well, our hope is that we don't have one at all. That's been our main focus, is how can we reach settlement. Beyond that, if there is a strike, we have no way of predicting, and we're not making any long-range plans. We want it to be as short as possible. So we really are taking a day-by-day, at the most, week perspective.
Mm-hmm. Is there any outer limit at which point you could say, well, we just can't keep up? If there is a long, long strike, at some point you'd have to start shipping patients to other hospitals and the rest and cut back services even further.
No, we really haven't thought along those lines. Our expectation is that we will reach a settlement. The other thing to recognize, in this community, we don't have a surplus of hospital beds that many of the hospitals in this community already are quite full. So that's not really an option that any of us want to or will pursue.
Mm-hmm. Should people be worried about the quality of care they'll receive at an Alina hospital if there is a strike?
No, we've worked very hard to assure people that they will receive good quality care. We would prefer it be with our regular nursing staff, but with a strike, we need to make all of the possible arrangements we can. We also want to impress on people that lots and lots of our services will not be affected by the striking nurses. So our Alina medical clinics, we have regional hospitals that circle the Twin Cities, places like Cambridge, Shakopee, St. Francis and Shakopee, River Falls Hospital, Buffalo. All of those are full and open and ready to handle the patients that they can. So we want to encourage people to use the resources that are out there. And, for instance, if people normally might go to an emergency department for more of a minor issue, to please use urgent care facilities or their doctor's offices. And if patients, people have any concerns, please contact your physician. That's the best resource.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gary.
Barbara Balick, who is an administrator with the Alina Health System. She's working on Alina's contingency plan, if indeed there is a nurse's strike come tomorrow morning. Tentative contract agreements have been reached at 5 of the 12 affected hospitals, and federal mediators have called for further talks starting this afternoon between the nurses and negotiators for the other 7 Twin City area hospitals. Of course, we'll keep you posted through the day. Now, if there is a strike, as Barbara Balick noted, hospitals, some hospitals at least, outside the metro area, are preparing to pick up some of the slack. And with more on that part of the story, here's Main Street Radio's Jeff Horwich.
He had just started working at one of the Twin Cities Children's Hospitals the last time nurses went on strike, in 1984. That time around, he recalls sending patients to other regional hospitals, placing some as far away as Denver and Salt Lake City. Now that Whitlock is 70 miles north of the metro in St. Cloud, it doesn't surprise him that he may be on the receiving end after June 1st.
We've already received, for instance, calls from several other Twin Cities hospitals that are concerned. One hospital was concerned about newborn intensive care patients. They have a unit that potentially could be shut down by the strike, and could they send patients up here?
Whitlock says he really has no idea how much new patient traffic might get thrown his way. But for the past month, he's been directing a task force of leaders from different hospital departments that has been meeting and trading emails under the theory that it's always better to be prepared. Not all surrounding hospitals have convened such formal discussions in response to the potential strike, but Whitlock is confident the regional health system, including health facilities in Duluth, Fargo, and Rochester, is equipped to handle any overflow.
We do have a good health system. We coordinate very well in emergency situations, and we're going to do everything we can to accommodate patients that need help in emergent situations. But all I can do is say we're going to do the best that we can.
St. Cloud is just a 20-minute helicopter ride from Minneapolis, and though the hospital heliport typically gets one or two flights a day, it can handle many more. If there's a strike, some ambulances that would normally head into the metro area might head instead to St. Cloud if paramedics think they can get faster care here. Individuals seeking their own emergency room care might make the same choice. At least one emergency room at Regions Hospital in St. Paul, which will not be hit by the strike, has contacted St. Cloud about helping with a possible overflow of trauma patients. But St. Cloud Director of Emergency Services Joe Helley makes it clear he doesn't anticipate any strain on his resources if a strike hits.
I could only speculate as to how soon we might see an impact from that. It could be immediate, although I think we're all confident that we'll have the staffing and we'll have the capability. As long as we have beds and staff, we'll be willing to accept patients.
The 320-bed hospital is used to operating near capacity, and nurses say the decision-making rules they already use to manage patient traffic will allow them to be flexible if the strike makes them even busier than usual. Carol Stile is a nurse in the intensive care unit, which could receive transfers of patients from the Twin Cities who need round-the-clock attention.
We're constantly triaging. We're talking to other nurses to determine those that are most stable and able to transfer, and talking with physicians. It's kind of a group effort to accommodate the need and to move as people are stable. In the cases where it's full and we know we're getting other patients, we accommodate by shuffling, and we shuffle in the safest way we can, and it works very well.
Still, they do have a limit, and the medical director, Dr. Whitlock, says St. Cloud won't be out asking for new patients. Mindful of the factors that have led to the impending strike, Whitlock hopes to weather any changes with minimal adjustments to existing schedules.
We're also going into a time around June 1st in which their maximum number of nurses are asking for vacation time and have that vacation time scheduled. And we want to be respectful to our own nursing staff and not ask them to work inordinately above and beyond what they absolutely need to do.
Some regional hospitals are hoping their nurses won't actually be tempted away by $40 an hour strike coverage work in the Twin Cities. Hospitals in Fargo and St. Cloud confirm classified ads and even personal phone calls are being used in an attempt to recruit nurses on their staffs. Jeff Horwich, Minnesota Public Radio, St. Cloud.
Well, no matter how these last-minute efforts to head off a possible nurses' strike tomorrow morning turn out today, the negotiations and the coverage of those negotiations have raised several broader questions about the nursing profession. And joining us now is Sandra Edwardson, who is the dean of the School of Nurses at the University of Minnesota. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. In your mind, is fallout from this nurses' strike, threatened nurses' strike, likely to change the way the healthcare system operates here in Minnesota?
I would hope that we will learn something important from this experience. I think there is common agreement that all is not well with the healthcare system, and particularly with hospitals. And I think this this whole negotiation process should have helped the two sides to see the other's point of view. And I hope that we can use that learning then as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. The pay for nurses seems to be relatively good. Is that fair to say?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. What about this respect issue, though? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's a very common complaint. In fact, there's an article in this month's Journal of the Health Affairs that compares about 43,000 nurses in over 700 hospitals in five Western countries. And regardless of the kind of financing mechanism or the kind of healthcare system they have, the levels of job dissatisfaction and the concern about staffing levels and respect are common across these five Western countries. So we have been blaming a lot of this on managed care, but apparently there are other issues that are affecting the satisfaction of nurses besides the structure of the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those other issues, you think?
Well, the same things that I think we are hearing from the nurses here and that have been found as variables that are important in comparing the magnet hospitals to other kinds of hospitals, and that is being able to be a part of the decision-making process, to be able to participate in staffing decisions, simple things like acknowledging the contribution that nurses are making to the health care of individuals, opportunities for advancement within the system are all kinds of common issues that we're seeing repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask you to speak up just a little bit? We're having some trouble hearing you.
Sure.
Oh, there you go. Okay, now things are working better. Nursing shortage, we've heard a lot about that. Is there, in fact, a shortage of nurses here in Minnesota, or is it more a question that people who are nurses aren't practicing their trade?
It's a little hard to tell exactly how many registered nurses are in the workforce. We know that of those who can maintain their licenses, that a very high proportion, like 89% or so, are actually in the workforce. The issue seems to be more in terms of how much are they working, that a large proportion of them are working part-time, so that we could make some marginal improvement, I think, in the shortage situation if those nurses could simply work more time. But we also have the issue of nurses are being drawn away into many other kinds of work besides direct patient care, and they've been found to be very useful workers for product development, medical product development companies, for example, or for managed care companies themselves in helping with the triaging of patients and doing some of the accounts management and so on, so that there are just numerous new opportunities available for registered nurses.
So if you go into nursing, that doesn't necessarily mean you end up at a hospital.
That's right. We like to say over here that the typical person is expected to have five careers in their lifetime, and we can say that within nursing you can have five careers within nursing itself.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this business of part-time versus full-time workers.
Right.
And why are so many nurses only working part-time? What's behind that?
I think there are two things going. One is that hospitals need a certain proportion of part-time individuals in order to be able to staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and still give people every other weekend or a reasonable number of weekends off. So they just need a number of part-time individuals to staff efficiently. But at the same time, I think we're hearing more and more nurses who are saying they are just becoming too fatigued with the level of work to be able to work full-time, and particularly as they get older. So one of the things that was found in this cross-national study, for example, was the large number of individuals, younger individuals, who are anticipating leaving the field because of the work stresses.
Are there initially enough people going into the profession then, but then too many are leaving to do other things? Is that kind of the root of the problem?
We expect the demand for nursing services will continue to go up as our population ages. Assuming, of course, that we continue to do things the way we are currently doing them. On the other hand, if you look at the demographics in terms of the number of young people who will be graduating from high schools and colleges and can potentially go into any of the healthcare disciplines, that number is going to begin to decline in about 3 or 4 years, so that the availability of young people to go into health professions is going to be severely limited. So what we believe we need to do is to consider how are we using our healthcare professionals, everyone from doctors, nurses, pharmacists, the various therapists, and saying what are the appropriate, where do we overlap? Where could we make better use of our skills and talents by working together differently? And those are some of the things that we're hoping that we can take some leadership here in at the university after this whole labor dispute is settled.
Mm-hmm. In terms of looking at changes to the way the people interact with each other, or what their responsibilities are and so on moving forward, do you see a dramatic change in the way our healthcare system operates, or some tinkering at the edges to make it more efficient? Do we need a big overhaul of the way the system works?
Well, of course, if I could be queen for the day,
well,
I would like to start with a blank sheet of paper and start all over. But realistically, over the years, the pattern of development in healthcare policy in this country has been the tinkering on the edges. There was a political scientist who wrote a paper called The Science of Muddling Through, and where he describes this tinkering at the edges. And I think that's what we've been doing, is muddling through our healthcare policy. So I suspect that's what we will continue to do into the future. But we have some models already of ways in which doctors and nurses can work together that not only improve the efficiency of the system from the health provider's point of view, but also result in less overlap, you know, and greater continuity of care for the patients themselves.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights.
Sure. Thank you.
Sandra Edwardson, who is the Dean of the School of Nurses at the University of Minnesota. We will be talking about some of the broader issues facing the healthcare system over the noon hour today, so don't go away. Arthur Kaplan, ethicist, bioethicist, will be joining us from Philadelphia. And, of course, our phone lines will be open for your questions and comments. Our website is open, meanwhile, if you'd like to get up on the soapbox and have your say about the nurses' situation or the broader questions facing the healthcare system. Our website address is minnesotapublicradio.org. Now, just a reminder once again that five nurses, negotiators for the nurses, and five of the 12 Twin City area hospitals have reached a tentative agreement, but there are seven on the list yet that still face the possibility of a nurses' strike at 5:30 tomorrow morning. Federal mediators have called negotiators for the nurses, and those seven remaining hospitals have called them to get together this afternoon to begin truly last-minute negotiations, and we will keep you posted. It's 6 minutes now before 12 o'clock.
I'm Greta Cunningham on the next All Things Considered. An angler trolling for fish snags an impressive set of elk antlers instead.
There are very few specimens like this in existence. The elk in this part of the world went extinct quite early, and very few specimens were saved.
That story plus all the day's news on the next All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 31st of May, 2001. It's the birthday of writer Bailey White, born in Thomasville, Georgia, 1950. She was a first grade teacher in her hometown when she started doing commentaries for NPR's All Things Considered. She's published two memoirs, Mama Makes Up Her Mind and Other Dangers of Southern Living, and Sleeping at the Starlight Motel and Other Adventures of the Way Back Home. It's the birthday of poet and novelist Jonas Agee, born in Omaha, 1943. Her first collection of short stories was Pretend We've Never Met, which introduces the reader to the fictional town of Divinity,
Iowa, which is also the setting of her first novel, Sweet Eyes. It's the birthday of comedian Fred Allen in Cambridge, Massachusetts, 1894. He worked nights at the Boston Public Library when he was in high school in Boston, and he came across a book about comedy, which fascinated him. So he began to collect jokes and also taught himself to juggle. And that was his start in vaudeville as a comic juggler. Got into radio with his own hour-long show, Town Hall Tonight, 1934, which was later renamed the Fred Allen Show. He wrote most of his own material and was famous for his satire and for poking fun at his corporate sponsors. And it's the birthday of poet Walt Whitman, born in West Hills, Long Island, in New York, in 1819. He was a printer and then the editor of a daily newspaper, the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. Came out with a first edition of Leaves of Grass in 1855 at his own expense because nobody else wanted to publish it. Sold 10 copies and gave away the rest. Whitman was not above self-promotion. He even wrote his own reviews of it anonymously. He said, "The public is a thick-skinned beast, and you have to keep whacking away at its hide to let it know you're there." In 1862, he went to Washington, took a series of bureaucratic jobs while he volunteered in Union hospitals. He was appalled by the conditions that he found there and published his collection of war poems, Drum Taps, in 1865, which included the great elegy on the death of Lincoln, "When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed." Ralph Waldo Emerson was a great fan of Whitman's. Henry David Thoreau felt otherwise. He said of Whitman, "He was not only eager to talk about himself, but reluctant to have the conversation stray from the subject for long." Here are some lines from Leaves of Grass on Whitman's birthday. "Who goes there hankering, gross, mystical, nude? How is it I extract strength from the beef I eat? What is a man, anyhow? What am I? What are you? All I mark is my own. You shall offset it with your own, else it were time lost, listening to me. Why should I pray? Why should I venerate and be ceremonious? Having pried through the strata, analyzed to a hair, counseled with doctors and calculated close, I find no sweeter fat than sticks to my own bones. In all people I see myself, none more and not one a barleycorn less, and the good or bad I say of myself, I say of them. I know I am solid and sound. To me the converging objects of the universe perpetually flow. All are written to me, and I must get what the writing means. I exist as I am, that is enough. If no other in the world be aware, I sit content, and if each and all be aware, I sit content. One world is aware, and by far the largest to me, and that is myself. And whether I come to my own today, or in 10,000 or 10 million years, I can cheerfully take it now, or with equal cheerfulness, I can wait." From Song of Myself by Walt Whitman. That's the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Production assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
This is Midday, coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio, and today we are focusing on the health care system. Of course, the immediate story being the threatened strike by Twin City area nurses against 12 Twin City area hospitals. Tentative contract agreements have been reached at five of the hospitals, but seven hospitals...